Slash and Cast.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Conjecture and Horrors podcast, where we talk about horror movies and horror-related content. I'm your host tonight, Rob, and with me is Laura.
Hello.
And Greg.
Hey, guys.
And we got some special guests that we're going to be talking to tonight about a movie they made. We got Riley Lorden.
Hello.
We got Nick.
Hello.
Nick Christian. So we have some guests. We have some guests tonight. Laura, Greg, you guys excited to talk to these guys?
So pumped.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Nick, Riley, you guys excited to be here?
Oh, could not be more excited. You know, this whole West Coast 8:30 thing, yeah. It's 10:30 Central
forgot
here.
About that.
So, no, it's not bad. We're glad to be here. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Nice, nice. Yeah, we're excited to have you guys talk about the movie you made, Fall of Camp Blood, Friday the 13th fan film. Just came out this year, correctly? Came out this year. I think behind the scenes, you guys are saying it took a couple years to make.
Way too long. But yeah, it did officially come out on May 13th. Premiered in our hometown, which we shot a lot of the film in as well.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
No kidding. Nice. Cool. I like it. Real quickly, Laura, Greg, do you guys want to talk about the backgrounds we have tonight that Riley and Nick were surprised we had? you want to start, Laura?
Yeah, hell yeah. So we each found a different, equally awesome poster from Fall of Camp Blood. And then we hop on. And these guys are like, oh, so is this going to be a video? We're like, no, just audio. We're like, then why the hell did you guys do that? I don't know. Just for fun. No, they're sick posters. I love it. I love this one that I have. It's like got Jason from the side and it has some of the cast like in the background and it's just all blood red. I love the coloring of it.
Yeah, mine. Oh, my God. I spent a good 3 days at the canvas drawing this work of wonder. No, I don't. Riley, you said who drew this again?
That one was done by Josh from Murder Moose. So Network's own poster right there.
Yeah, this is beautiful artwork. I didn't know he could draw like this. This is great. Essentially, we've got this, I don't know, it's like a Reservoir Dogs identity type of configuration with the main characters behind me. And then there's this sort of rose hue shading overtones over the whole thing. And then, of course, you have like the lake and the forest behind them. It's just fantastic. They're sort of like emanating out of me. I don't know if they're like my guardians or what, but I love the configuration here. It's fantastic.
Greg, you should be a weatherman, the way you're like, I don't know,
gesticulating.
Pointing and, yeah, gesticulating.
He dies first and then
nope, no spoilers.
Oh.
That's funny. Yeah, for me, I just have I think one of the main page images, Fall of Camp Blood. It has Jason's face. It's pretty spooky, pretty creepy.
Yeah,
same
I designed
as, like,
that one.
Shirt.
That's the only one here I designed.
Oh, you designed this one?
Ooh,
you designed this
nice.
One?
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, actually,
like
here's
awesome.
A fun fact. We can already start off with fun facts. That picture of Jason on that white one is taken with Nick's phone. It's nothing fancy.
Really? Whoa.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Dang. What kind of phone you got, Nick? That's a good picture,
yeah,
man.
Shit.
That was a Pixel 3?
Pixel 3, yeah.
Oh, yeah? Wow. Oh, okay. All right.
Damn.
All right. Shout out to Pixel 3. Nice. I like it.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, we forgot to say, like, you guys made this movie. It's super cool. But you're also the SlasherCast Network, our network. You're our overlords. You tell us what to do.
Oh.
So thank you guys for that. But you guys are doing so many things. You got so many plates spinning out there trying to keep them all afloat. You know, I mean, how do you guys do it? How do you guys do it every day to get all these things done?
We don't.
The thing is with our jobs, we've been pretty transparent about kind of what we do now for a living because we're contracted with Boss Team Games, who published Evil Dead the Game. And actually, I actually hired Josh to do an Evil Dead the Game poster for San Diego Comic-Con. So that's kind of how this whole Fall Camp Blood poster started for yours, Greg. Yeah, and it's the thing is with our jobs and the way our with Boss Team Games, you never know because if a news article comes out that changes something we're working on or something like that, in the flip of a switch, your entire day changes. So we could have – today we had like a 9-hour shooting block for Slash and Cast. But at the same time, if something comes up and our – boss is like, hey, change of plans. Here's what we're doing. Then that's it. And that's your whole day. So it's really exciting. It's fast paced. But what's great about it is that for the first time in our lives, we're actually working on something that matters. Like, it's passionate. Oh, nice. It's actually, we care about what we're doing. I'm sure you feel the same way. It's a lot better than a gas station, right?
Oh, hell yeah. If I quit my gas station job, I am chilling.
That's awesome.
That's good, man. You guys are living the dream. I like it. That's super cool.
Sometimes.
Super cool. Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, that's true. Are we drinking anything tonight, Laura? Like, are we? I'm not really sure. I mean, I'm drinking just like a fucking tea to stay awake. What is this? Yerba mate tea and shit? You know, I'm drinking that. Are you drinking anything tonight, Laura?
I'm drinking I've got a seltzer and a glass of wine because I couldn't decide what I wanted. So
okay.
I'm double fisting.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay. Are you drinking anything,
Greg? Friday night, you know.
Are you drinking anything, Greg?
Yeah, I actually concocted my own drink and it's actually pretty good. So obviously with Friday the 13th, the theme is blood. Mm. So it's actually darker than it looks, trust me. So it's a mix of a little bit of vermouth, Campari, and aperitivo. Along with some simple syrup and LaCroix lemon.
That is pretty effort. Good.
Pretty good.
That sounds like effort.
Yeah. That's a lot of shit, dude.
It's about 30 seconds of effort and it was worth it.
That sounds like death tomorrow. I mean,
Without the simple syrup, it's bitter as hell. But you mix it in and you put the LaCroix in there. It's actually pretty good and it goes down very smooth.
Smoother than
a machete through the chest, as they say.
I like it. Nice. Riley, Nick, are you guys drinking anything? I see Nick. You got some water. Do you guys have any alcohol?
Yeah, okay. Well, what you don't see is like this empty bottle of Old Forester.
Oh, wow.
Old Forester. I like it.
Early, like, I don't know, 4 hours ago now, we recorded a commentary for Carrie, and we played a dumb drinking game, but instead of taking a sip, we took shots every time one of those things came up, and, I mean, like, an hour and a half ago, we were gone, so it's a miracle we recovered enough to come back. I almost messaged you, honest to God, I almost messaged you, Rob, and I was like, hey, listen, we might be in trouble. we might be in danger, but we've recovered and we're here to make the show happen.
Nice. Damn. I like it. We're going to get some good stories in tonight. We're going to get some good stories, I think. That's funny. Yeah, so let's get into like the movie, making the movie. But first, let's check out a trailer real fast.
Today marks the one-year anniversary of the nationally recognized Camp Blood massacre. And in an attempt to forget about the tragedy, in just 1 week, the infamous Camp Crystal Lake will officially be demolished.
Legends always originate from some sort of real-life incident. All the rumors, all the stories, all the massacres, it's not true. Not once. Not once have I seen a legitimate file about what happened. Jarvis, that kid you're talking about, he's innocent. Ask any local in this town. They'll tell you the truth. That massacre? It was Jason.
Jason's still out there. But you have no idea what I've just seen. The town covered it up. And now, with all these people returning to the camp, he's going to come back.
The world
All right, we're back from the trailer. Let's see. So where do we want to start with this, Laura? Do you want to ask the first question? What do you think?
Before I ask a question, can I just say the obvious? Like, you guys made a fucking movie. Like,
yes.
Does that ever just, I don't know. Do you ever just like, you're sitting around, you're like, I made a movie.
It's
huge.
It's especially because of where we were at some places. There were so many times, especially back in the reviving Camp Blood days. We can talk about that if you guys want. But there was a time where it's like, how the hell are we going to make a movie when we have no money? We're out. We're screwed. We don't have a film ready, but we ran out of money. And there was even a time, 2 months, really 2 months before release, we were not in a spot for a quality film. I mean, it was garbage. It was what we would call a vomit cut, where no sound effects.
Whoa.
No, yeah, I mean, no Foley at all. No special effects were done. It was atrocious. And between me and Nick and then our other producer, Peter, who's behind Greg there, he's also like one of the main stars. We just went to town. Between sound mainly, sound was the main one, and then we hit out a lot of special effects, and yeah, to see it come together, it felt like a small miracle. It's like, wow. And then you still don't know if it's gonna work. Like until the day you premiere it, you assume that it sucks.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it was up until the day of the premiere when we were editing, getting the final touches going and hoping that people will like it.
Yeah, we came in, I think the final render for the premiere was roughly an hour and a half before the premiere. I rendered it, I put it on a hard drive, and I drove to my hometown to premiere it. And it ended up getting a standing ovation. I think that was a pity standing ovation, but it was a standing ovation nonetheless. So we'll take it. So at least people had a good time. We're not going to sit here and claim it's the best F-13 fan film of all time. We never wanted that. We just wanted it to feel like Friday. And I think we accomplished that.
Yes, you did.
Absolutely.
It feels campy. It feels like an 80s campy film. That was the goal.
Mm-hmm. Nice. That's so cool. That's so cool. I mean, what was the inspiration you guys had for this movie, besides, of course, just the Friday the 13th franchise?
Yeah, you take it. You know where it all started.
Yeah. Well, when we started reviving Camp Blood, we started out as a direct sequel to Part 6. Obviously, that didn't work out. We ran out of time, ran out of money. And so we decided to go back to the drawing board and sort of hash out a new story that was a direct sequel to Part 4.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it – so we did a fan film that was, I think, 11 minutes in 2017. And I think right now it has like 250,000 views, give or take. It did pretty well. So we had quite a few requests to make another one. And then with Never Hike Alone and Vince DeSanti raising money and kind of opening a door to other fan filmmakers, we ran in with that. We got into the mix with that. So we had a fan film that was already doing well, and then we got requests to do another one. It's like, well, if we're going to do it, we might as well make, you know, raise a couple of dollars and do it right. And we did. And at first, we bombed heavily. Reviving Camp Blood was a tremendous failure. But we got there eventually.
Nice. Yeah. Greg, do you have a question?
Yeah. You know, the first thing that I think a lot of people are curious about, and both you guys have mentioned it, is this idea of running out of money. And that's something that I feel like every indie filmmaker comes to terms with. You know, it's an uphill challenge, running out of money. If you were to take a pie chart and slice it up into a few pieces, where does it go? Is it going to equipment? Is it going to paying the extras and actors, or is it, you know, getting permits, or in your experience, where does it get burnt up the quickest?
Well, I think more than most fan films or just films in general, equipment kind of hit us hard because we couldn't just, because we shot in a town called Byron, Illinois. A lot of it was in Byron, Illinois. We also shot in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin.
So you're going to remote locations. Yeah.
Yeah. Out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, really out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, so you couldn't just go rent a camera for a week and go pick it up at a store. It was, you were pretty much either stuck renting for multiple weeks and getting it shipped to you and shipping it back. And that's okay with things like Lens Pro to go, but it wasn't realistic because we were doing shooting blocks that were separated by several months. It was going to cost so much money to pull that off. So what we did was, we actually, a lot of the film was shot on a camera just like what we're on right now, which was a Pocket 4K. We did a little bit on a Blackmagic Pocket 6K, and a good chunk of it was on a Blackmagic Ursa, which they're all cheaper cinema cameras, but they got the job done because we couldn't go rent. I think, honest to God, I think most of the money, and this is what people don't think about, is feeding the cast and crew.
Oh, really?
Nice.
Because that was the thing. Like, you're asking these people to take work off, to give out a week or more of their time to do this for you. Because you can't really pay them. You're not allowed to profit. So even that includes the cast and crew. Like, they can't technically get paid. You could pay for time, technically, but you can't pay them a salary or anything like that. It's
right.
It's legal mumbo jumbo. But so if you're going to do that, at the very least, we need to give you a place to stay for free. we need to feed you and feed you pretty well and just make you comfortable. So yeah, I mean, food, when we had a cast and crew of roughly what, 25 people on our 9-day shooting mm-hmm. block. Yeah. I mean, money went away so fast. And then we had incidentals, things like our main car, our main 1985 car, it blew a tire on the way there.
Oh, no.
So we had to fix that. We had to pay for the towing service and then getting it fixed to actually shoot with it. A lot of stuff like that. It was rough.
Yeah, renting the ambulance from that opening scene.
That was the entire budget, right. Basically. I don't know why, because I've seen so many fan films use ambulances, but to find one that was accurate to 1985, which ours technically isn't, it's from 1993, but whatever.
I saw that and I was like, that's bullshit, guys.
Yeah, this is fucking nonsense. This film is garbage. It's from 1993, but finding even that was tough, and it was half of our budget that we used for the opening scene. And then you still have to feed all these cast and crew, these people that came out. And it's just tough. We had to get it for that shoot specifically because of COVID. We couldn't use an indoor bathroom on the house that we were at. So we had to get porta potties. That's just another thing that you just have to do. Insurance is a big thing. It's usually the little things that end up eating away at your budget.
Mm-hmm. Right. Wow. You could almost make a movie out of you making the movie. That sounds almost
like you can make a movie about me bitching for sure.
That's funny. Wow. Laura, do you have a question?
Yeah, I was going to say, so roughly how long did this take?
What? Our first fundraising was in, was it 2018?
Yeah.
February of 2018.
Yeah, but that was Reviving Camp Blood, right?
That was Reviving Camp Blood, yes. We filmed that summer, Reviving Camp Blood, got about 80% of a movie done, got rained out. Our farthest cast member was like 6 hours away.
Yeah.
Couldn't get him back. We decided to go to the drawing board, do Fall Camp Blood, fundraise again. And yeah, movie didn't come out until May 2022.
Yeah, a little over 4 years from start to finish. Mm-hmm. Reviving Camp Blood, just to like elaborate on that some, because before the Fall Camp Blood, it was Reviving Camp Blood. It was a sequel to Part 6. But we raised $11,000, which was not quite enough to fund what we were doing, but we made it work. And we shot 9 days. We had a 9-day shooting block. 3 of those days were rained out.
Wow.
And that was enough to bury us. So we got in a situation where we didn't have enough money to bring everybody back. But even if we did, was it worth it? Were we in a situation where the movie was good enough to justify that? So as we sat down, we made a debate. It was like, okay, if we have to get more money regardless, do we continue this story or do we go something original? And what I did actually was between me and Nick and Griffin, who was one of our producers, and he played Jason for part of the film. And I pitched them this scene it started at a drive-in, and it was 1 year after the events of Part 4. And it's basically the opening scene you see to the Fall Camp Blood, but that them sitting in the car, like me and my fiance.
You mean you?
Them sitting in the car.
Yeah,
me. It's that originally would have picked up at a drive-in to the opening weekend of the Back to the Future. That's how it would have started. It was really cool, but our local drive-in would not work with us, which is a shame because they're huge horror fans. That's what I pitched to Nick and Griffin, and we were like, wow, that's really freaking cool. We started over.
Yeah, and that scene actually was the last one we filmed.
Yeah, it's funny. It was the one that almost got thrown away, which is a shame. I think it's a good scene. Not to toot my own horn or anything, but no, it's not me. It's just that's a fun scene.
I do say so myself.
it really helps establish Peter, though. It helps establish James Deere, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had fun, but also it does help one of our main characters. I didn't want to be in it, by the way.
Really?
The person that was supposed to be in it was the person that was in our original 2017 fan film, and he just couldn't make it. It didn't work out, and we were out of time. So I was like, all right, fuck it, I'll do it. And then I made my fiance do it.
I was about to say, was he supposed to make out with your fiance originally? Like, wait, what?
It's funny though you mentioned that, because there is a shot, there's a wide shot of, it's like a crane shot of the car, and me and Rachel making on the car, but I wanted to shoot the shot because I had something specific in my head, so I gave Nick my shirt and Nick went and pretended to make out with my fiance in the car as I shot it.
Wow.
Great stuff.
There I am.
That's so funny. That's so funny. Wow. How was it, Riley, like actually acting in this? You said you didn't want to, so you probably didn't think you were going to. How was it like actually acting in it?
I was never uncomfortable with it. I think if you're directing somebody, at the very least, you should have some sort of competency when it comes to acting. Like, you should kind of understand a little bit the ups and downs of how to perform and be natural. So I was okay with it. I took an acting class my senior year of college. It didn't do shit for me, but I did take one. So I was okay with it. I was way more worried about my fiance. She hates being on camera. She doesn't like it. So she was really outside of her comfort zone there. And then asking her to make out on camera too. It's just a lot. But because there was three people on crew that day. Nick was basically handled all of it. I think Nick deserves a lot of credit for that scene because he basically directed the whole thing. And he shot the whole thing. He was doing all the lighting. And he technically had to be responsible for sound at the same time. So, hey, you deserve more credit for that scene.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Brent was there, obviously.
I did see, like, after we watched the movie, that, like, in the credits, like, Nick is everywhere.
You're in everything.
Your name is in there 50 times. And I was like, dude, you did a lot of shit behind the scenes, man. So, kudos, Nick. Good job.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, skeleton crew, we did everything.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff where it was a five-man crew. And for this, yeah, it was us and then Brent, who Brent was insanely clutch. He's the kind of the holy story of all of this film, is Brent kind of making a name for himself. But he did all the makeup for that, as well as playing Jason. And then Elijah Walters came in, green guy, came in, and he was handling all the fog. He helped with the sound. And just whatever else he needed to. So, and that was it. That was the whole crew for that. We did have somebody coming. We actually posted on Facebook, like, hey, we need a really cool car. And a guy, I don't even know how much we paid him. It wasn't that much, but he was just like, yeah, I got a cool car. And actually, we intentionally had to shoot because he had a whole bunch of car show labels, stickers on his windshield. So we had to shoot to avoid those. That's why there's no front shots of the car. I wish we could have more.
Wow, that's so cool. Greg, do you have a question?
Yeah, well, I mean, speaking of Peter Anthony, he's kind of behind me here. Yeah. This guy was he was, I don't know, in this picture, he kind of looks like
looks like Loomis.
Dr. Loomis,
yeah. Maybe he was. Does. Oh my god.
if Loomis was on steroids, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe if he had, like, lifted some weights in the Smiths Grove Sanitarium for like 15 years like Michael, then
yeah.
Dude was jacked and energetic.
Yeah.
I loved the energy that he brought. I don't know. Did you have to hype him up? He seems like a self-motivated type of guy. Like, it looked like he was ready to go in every scene, and, you know, he strung together a lot of the energy in a lot of those scenes. I thought his character was so great.
Peter, he's such a huge piece of the puzzle because one is his performance, and he is ready to go. And he was so professional, which is crazy because he doesn't really act. His only performance really before the Fall Camp Blood was Vengeance, where he played a prisoner, and he doesn't do much. He doesn't say much, doesn't really do much. So to come in and take a lead role was a huge step up, but basically no outtakes. When you see the outtakes on the Blu-ray, it's nothing of Peter. He just doesn't mess up.
Wow.
Yeah, he was on top of it. The thing is about Peter, he's always that intense. Like, he's that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's always just ready to go and jacked up. So, yeah, it didn't take much for him to snap into character and be ready to go. So, yeah, he was great. But he's also our producer, and he's a huge, huge piece of the puzzle when it came to marketing for the Fall Camp Blood. Because, you know, the first time around, we raised $11,000. But the second time around, we raised $34,000.
Wow.
And a lot of that had to do with him. Yeah, he's amazing. And he directed Roseblood as well. I don't know if you've seen that film.
Is that the sequel, or?
He directed, it was a sequel to Part 7. So he did that. And yeah, he's also performing in it, but he did direct and write that as well. So huge F-13 fan, and he brought it all.
He definitely had my favorite line of the movie where he sticks the knife into the board and he's like, final chapter, motherfucker. And then he stomps out of the room. I was juiced. Yeah. I wanted to go find Jason after that scene.
Oh, God.
That line's 100% ADR, and it was done about 6 days before the movie came out.
Oh, wow.
Damn.
That's crazy.
I did. Yeah, we almost cut it out because it was really tough to ADR it and make it sound good without being to Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
So.
Right.
But I think it works. It's just as much cheese as we want. I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. I did want to ask, speaking of acting, like another person who I thought shined in this movie was, who's the tattooed guy in the bar?
Jonathan Ivey.
That was like the bar. Who that guy, when his scene, I was like, holy shit. Like, I put in my notes, this guy should have an Oscar. I was like, dude, the way he was like calling the kid like pussies and this is your fault, oh, right. Getting them all up in their face. I was like, damn, this, who's this guy?
Rob, that's you in like 40 more years.
Okay. All right. Probably, yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you asked because he deserves more credit. That was Jonathan, the leglock monster Ivy. He is a legitimate professional MMA fighter. He's called the leglock monster because he has the most leglock wins in professional MMA history.
Damn,
he actually, wow. It's funny because I was a fan of his. I mean, I love fighting and wrestling and MMA. So I was a fan of his. I knew who he was. And one day he messaged us and was saying he was a fan of Slash and Cast. He's a huge Friday the 13th The Game fan and whatnot. And we stayed in contact because of that. And I've always had that in the back of my mind. So when we were writing the script, we wrote down a fight scene. I was like, we got to get John. We got to try to get John and see if he'll do it. And no acting experience. He actually, it's crazy because he's the most humble, the kindest, you know, teddy bear you would ever would meet. He's just the nicest, coolest guy. And he came up to us and he's like, hey, I've never acted before. I have no stunt performances at all. So, like, you know, work with me here. What do I need to do? I was like, John, just go. Just go and try and just be yourself and see what happens. And he was another one that came fully prepared. Very minimal outtakes and just came in and did it. And then that stunt is very much him being thrown over the table. And at that time, Peter's hurt. Peter tore his whole shoulder off. His arm, his bicep is torn, so he could not physically throw John. So John had to do it himself, and he did, and he 100% sold it. He's amazing.
Wow. Yeah, he seemed like he waited his whole life to drop those bombs in that scene. That was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, dang, this guy is stealing this scene right here. I was like, holy shit, you know?
Yeah, he came in and he went all out. I remember somebody when our trailer premiered, somebody said he was over the top. I'm like, stop. Don't you ever be rude to him like that. He's amazing.
And yeah, he came in and every time he messed up a line, he was beating himself up. And we're like, nah, we're good. Just go again. Nah, he was the one beating himself up about it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Wow. That's so cool. That's so cool. Laura, do you have a question?
Yeah, I feel like I want to hear some juicy stories, so...
Wait, you don't know what to ask Laura, or what? Are you nervous now?
Yeah, no. I just feel like I kind of want to know, like, obviously, what was your favorite scene to film or favorite part about filming? But maybe, I don't know, what was the most challenging? I want to hear some more tea.
The sex, like, tent scene? Is that what you want to ask about, Laura?
Do you want that story?
No, that was not. Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. I do.
I'll answer those questions, Laura. But that scene, so an obstacle course for us.
Yeah.
That we had a whole death scene written and halfway shot with Kelly and Levante, who dies in that scene. We had a whole thing with them, but we couldn't get it done in time, and we couldn't get them back to shoot to finish off their death scene. So we're like, skip over it and pretend that they are safe and sound off in the lake skinny dipping somewhere? Or do we try to add a scene and make it work?
Please tell me it's you two in the tent and that you guys are the shadows.
It's me and my fiance.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I volunteered and I was denied, all right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nick is there. Nick shot it. But yeah, it's me and my fiance pretending to have sex in a tent. And yeah.
Pretending?
Pretending legitimately. Because the thing is, there are shots where Nick has to get in the tent with us and film up her body, you know? And it's like we had to, fake it out. But it does look pretty legit. I was like, God damn. Like, it's like, jeez. But yeah, that's
funny.
So yeah, that's me and my fiance doing this whole death thing, and the whole boiling blood, that was a fluke. That was not really expected. Whoa. Yeah, it just happened.
That looks so dope.
Yeah, we have a great outtake of that on the outtake reel, the blooper reel, because we're all just like, oh my god, it's boiling!
Yeah, that was definitely dangerous to have liquid on that old school oil lamp. Look cool.
Yeah, it worked. Yeah, then actually...
Dude, I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, it made that kill so much better. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't do... So Callie had to do her lines on an iPhone with Griffin, because they're dating to this day. The Fall Camp Blood brought them together.
Wow. Nice. See, this is the tea I wanted. Yes. Awesome.
They started dating on set, and now they're still together. Aww. So Griffin recorded her lines, and then I got Levante's lines the day before the premiere on ADR. And why it's so funny, where he's like, get the fuck off me, bitch. Like, I just said, Levante, how would you react in this scenario? Go. And that's what he said. I was like, that's perfect. Thank you. You can go home.
That's so funny. Wow.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
So, that's so crazy. Riley, did your fiance question you at all, being like, okay, one scene, you're trying to, like, do me in a car. Now we got to go in a tent and do me. Are you trying to, like, say something? Like, what are you trying to make me do?
Kind of movie filming here.
I've been with Rachel for almost – we're getting married on December 2nd, and that will be our 11-year anniversary. So at this point, she's heard it all. So, yeah, it's not even – actually, nice. Another funny story. There's the shot where the truck is going at the body in the road, and they had to turn off and avoid it. It's supposed to be Callie's body. That is my fiance's body, and that was shot at 2 a.m. the morning before the premiere.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and then you stuck it in, like, the day before?
Yeah, like, that was our final render that happened 30 minutes before the premiere. it was to get that shot in there.
Wow.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy.
Damn.
And then we had some cars pulling up to us, and they're like, are you okay? I was like, oh, we're just shooting a documentary. Don't worry about it. Yeah, you say, you either tell them you're working on a documentary, or you say, this is for my mother's birthday present, but since Rachel was shirtless and covered in blood, I went with documentary.
We used to be able to say school project,
yeah,
but
school project.
Now we're a little too old for that.
Yeah, school project.
Wow, that's so crazy. That's so crazy. Greg, do you have a question?
Yeah. Who's the girl that was the musician that played the guitar? What was that Courtney? Or I mean, how do you say it? Tasha? Tatya?
Tasha Cartillo. No, that was played... I'm zoning out all my freaking names.
Or Carly.
So, yeah, Carly Sloan. And it's, is it Sam? Or, yes, Sam?
No.
No? Hold on. No, it's Sam. Because she, no, Sam is Callie. Yeah.
Heather.
So it's Heather.
Heather.
Yes.
Yeah, Heather, yeah. I thought that, speaking of shots and scenes, I thought the scene that was so creative was when they're going back. Okay, she's obviously been dispatched pretty quickly by Jason, and they're going back up to investigate. And as they're walking closer to the room, you hear the static feedback from the electric guitar amp. I don't think I've ever heard that. I've ever seen that before in a movie. I don't know if that was something you guys just came up with or what, but I thought that was so creative because it adds tension. I mean, how many times have we seen movies where you walk up toward the door, maybe the door is sort of ajar, or there's some type of other indicator that something, you know, foul has transpired, but I've never heard like the guitar static as like, you know, the buzzing of it. I didn't realize how creepy that sounded. That was a great scene.
Yeah. First of all, thank you. Because I feel like half the people in this world don't realize what sound editing went into that. Like, I think a lot of people don't even notice that there's an amplifier sound in the background. And we kept playing with it because we weren't sure if it should be more like louder and louder and louder to the point where it's the only thing you hear. And it just wasn't working. So I was like, all right, if you hear it, fine. If your brain can register it, fine. It really works. But if not, oh well. But... I don't know what that spawned from. I think so. I grew up playing guitar. I still play to this day, and I think that sound has always kind of annoyed the hell out of me. So yes, I knew it could work well in a movie, and the fact that it works so well for tension, as well. Because it needed to work because we didn't have the ability to shoot the aftermath of Carly's body, of Heather's body. Because she was gone. She's from Ohio. So
I was
her back,
wondering about that.
Yeah, I wish we could because it would be so much better. And we actually were going to reshoot that scene, but scheduling didn't line up. We were going to reshoot it for the Blu-ray. Like, we were going to do it last month. And it just didn't work out to get Carly back out here.
Well, you know, I think it actually – another reason it works out is because I don't think that you need to see the aftermath of every single kill. I think if you mix in – I mean, maybe you split it 80-20% and because otherwise almost it might feel too formulaic all the way through. I thought you guys were formulaic enough with the kills to make it feel very traditional, campy enough. And I actually I was wondering why we didn't see what happened, but I thought, oh, that was cool because it was almost – the tension leading up to it made you have to use your imagination when they walk back out of the room. So I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah. No, thank you. I'm glad that worked because it was the only way to save money, really. It's like we had to have you fill in the blanks. And that's old school filmmaking. That's something I love about John Carpenter's Halloween. Mm-hmm. If you're filling in the blanks, it works better. I will say we were going to go nuts with that kill because it's arguably the worst kill in the film. And we know that it's one of the biggest pieces of feedback we heard when the movie came out. So we were going to redo it and we were going to make it the best kill in the movie. So we were going to toss some money at it and we were going to have the neck of the guitar shoved down her throat. It was going to be brutal. It was going to be, yeah, it was going to be intense, but unfortunately it just didn't work out. And it's either we keep delaying Blu-rays or, you know, we just get them out and finally fulfill the orders that we had for 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We didn't get to see enough, though, when he kicked her straight through the door. That was insane. I don't know how you guys pulled that off because that looked so seamless. The way when he kicked his foot up, but then the camera shot to the back from the hallway side and the door just burst back. That was pretty amazing.
Yeah, that scene was fun. So what was cool about that scene is that we had two guest people in at the time. So Greg Nyblack was playing Jason. He won a raffle to play Jason for a scene. And then Katie Berlin, yep, is the actress in that scene. And she had a perk. She bought a perk in Indiegogo to do it, to be killed by Jason. So we had both a guest Jason and a guest star in that scene.
That's awesome. Nice.
And yeah, to ask her to do a stunt like that. And I know Katie pretty well because I went to college with her brother. So I was a little more comfortable saying, just fall through the fucking door, Katie. but I would never – my big thing is if I'm going to ask somebody to do a stunt like that in a cheap film like this where they're not trained professionals, I'll do it myself first. So I did. I launched the door first. It's the same thing we did on other films too. It's like I'll do it first, and if everything's okay, go for it. And she did. I mean, she did it. But there are some special effects going on there. We added some door splintering when she comes through, and there's motion blur added to the door because that was shot to be in slow motion, but it wasn't going to work. So we actually had to re-add motion blur to the door to make it look like it was going fast because she really is just kind of – she's just falling, really, really casual.
Wow.
Yeah.
I
didn't even notice that.
Super cool.
Power of Adobe After Effects.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
TM.
That's part of promotion. can we talk about your guys, Jason Voorhees, the process of the effects, the actor behind the mask, directing it, writing it, story, for Nick creating these things. What was that like getting this Jason to life in your movie?
Well, I mean, yeah, we started out, like we said, with Reviving Camp Blood. It was a direct sequel to Part 6, and we just had a Part 6 costume.
Yeah, very simplistic.
And so then when we went back to the drawing board, did Fall of Camp Blood, we decided to go for a sequel to Part 4 a year later. So we kind of thought of what would that look like and sort of had it in our head. And who did we reach out to first?
Well, so the big piece of that puzzle was actually Peter, because we were pushing for something pretty specific. And Peter was hey, I know Corey Kaufman time.
Yep.
Corey Kaufman designed a look that was somewhere between 4 and 6. And then Marcio Charlie, who owns Horror Costume Studios, yep, he teamed up with Corey Kaufman. And they call it the hallucination is what they call that undermask with that weird kind of rotten looking Part 4. Yeah, and it's a really cool look, but I'm glad it's only made out of latex. We didn't do silicone, mainly because of where Marcio was at the time designing. He was just transitioning to using silicone for the first time, so it wasn't worth the risk, and we needed it fast. It was like a 3-week turnaround. So yeah, it's super cool design, but the big piece of the puzzle is Brent Edgett.
Yeah, when we first started, we had Griffin, obviously, friend to the end.
Yeah.
He was our original Jason, and we shot, how much did we shoot? Maybe, looking back now, it's probably maybe 50% of the movie.
Yeah, I think Griffin shot three full scenes as Jason, but two of them were big.
Yes.
There were big scenes we had to work around with him as Jason.
Yeah, and then he was moving to
Tennessee,
and so we couldn't get him back. And so we were kind of stressing a little bit. yeah, when we went to which was that? That was Days of the Dead Chicago.
Yeah. There was literally a time where you were saying you could play Jason.
Yeah, which yikes. Yeah, that was, I'm like, well, if I gotta, I gotta. We went to Days of the Dead Chicago and we had a booth there for Fall Camp Blood. Mm-hmm. You know, met a lot of cool people, and one of the people we met was this little Indiegogo cosplayer who goes by Gore Galore. His name's Brent, and we talked to him and, you know, just got his card, just followed him on Instagram, whatever.
And he had no idea who we are. The only reason he talked to us was because he recognized the style of the mask, and he knew it was Marcio that made the mask because Marcio designed his cosplay mask. So it was just a fluke. He happened to recognize it, so we talked to him.
Yeah, and then we shot a little more. Then Griffin said, hey, I can't come back. And that's when we were really stumped to figure out who was going to fill those shoes.
Yeah. I remember Brent. I remember he said he was from Iowa, so not too far away from us. And I reached out to him on Instagram. I was like, hey, we have a spot. I don't know if you're up for it, but if you're interested, you could play Jason in front of a good chunk of people. I mean, go if it's up to you, man. But he was super stoked, and he loved it. And I've said this at the premiere. The one thing I'm so freaking proud of, like the huge thing that came for the Fall Camp Blood, was Brent went from being a cosplayer who was half-assed popular on Instagram to now playing Jason in multiple fan films. He played Michael in Roseblood. He has gone on to do crew work for Cody Newton. He's done you know, tons of different PA work. He's just made a name for himself in this industry and just loves it. Insanely talented makeup effects artist. And all of that just happened to spawn because we met him at a convention and needed his help. So that's like the coolest thing that came from Fall Camp Blood, is Brent now being in this industry and making a name for himself.
Yeah, the pieces just fell perfectly. And, you know, super happy for him. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
Did pretty well as Jason, I think.
He's incredible.
Yeah.
I can't imagine anyone else matching the movements of Ted White the way Brent did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what made me ask the question, because watching your guys' movie, like, the vibe was there of Jason. You know, like, I haven't seen all the Jason movies, all the Friday. I mostly remember Jason X. That's probably, I don't know if that's my favorite or worst one. but like, definitely the vibe, like, yeah, Brent nailed it, you know, through there, like, just like menacing presence of standing there, you know, he nailed that. Greg, do you have a question you want to ask?
No, I just had a comment. I thought it's so cool that you guys get excited for the success of others. Just as this, I feel like it's the same for us. Like, we, as Laura mentioned, like, we're excited for you guys just because, you know, you put it together, and it's so cool to see, you know, you kind of do it, because everyone sort of has these ideas in their head, like, oh, it'd be cool to do this, cool to do that. But, you know, you never see it come to fruition. So it's just kind of exciting to watch you do it. And I mean, when I was watching it on the Oculus.
Wow.
So I had like the 3D effect. I was like,
wow.
I was like in a theater. And what you can do is I figured out a way to get it to where you can drop the controls and you use your hands like Minority Report to pinch things, and you can bring it closer to your screen, to your face. So anytime Brent came up and, you know, Jason was there, I was like, oh, I need to see it, you know, closer. It was pretty scary, but also amazing. And it just made me appreciate, you know, kind of the product that much more. I thought it was so good.
Holy shit.
Well, yeah, no. Did either awesome. Of you guys think that somebody would be doing my Minority Report to with your movie?
There's always somebody.
We found them.
We found them.
I'm that somebody.
Oh, wow. That's so funny. Laura, do you have another question? I think we're getting close to probably the end here. A couple more questions, maybe.
I mean, was it always like, this is going to be an F-13 movie? Like, do you guys have anything else that you were working on before this? Or I just feel like you guys, I know you're such big fans of the franchise. Like, it's actually crazy. We've been doing this podcast on the Conjecturing Pod for like almost 3 years, and we actually have never reviewed a Friday the 13th movie.
This is the first one. This is like the first.
I know.
One.
This is like the first time we've ever talked about anything in the universe.
This is like
the
third one I've watched in my lifetime, probably. Yeah. I know. Jeez, I got to get on it.
Yeah. So was it always going to be F-13?
This specifically, yeah. This project was from the get-go. Was just meant to be a bigger, better version of our 2017 fan film.
Mm-hmm.
Man, we were sitting on so many original ideas, to this day, sitting on so many original ideas that we would love to make happen, but now it just comes down to money and time, especially time. I don't know when we'd be able to do it. Actually, I mean, I know Rob has some stories that I love as well that I would love to produce, and it's just, it all comes down to time. And yeah, I think what's really cool about where we're at and kind of like who we work for is that they are very film present as well. They have the ability to make some really cool things outside of just video games. And I'm hoping that we can kind of sneak in there as well and maybe do some original stuff. I've always wanted to. I'm a huge whodunit guy. I love Scream. I grew up in that type of Scooby-Doo type of stuff. I would love to take that teen slasher whodunit and bring it back today in a cheeky kind of way.
I like
it.
Oh,
man.
Like it.
Okay, follow-up question. Can I act in your next film?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'm writing that down. I'm not going to forget it now. So if you say no, I'm going to be really pissed off.
No, I'll fly myself out there. I don't eat that much. It's all right.
Me and
I don't eat that much.
That's what all budget. Of them said. And next thing I know, I spent thousands of dollars on food.
I do drink a lot, though, so I don't know.
They also said that.
They also drink a lot of my beer.
Yeah, I remember, especially reviving Camp Blood. My God, dude, those guys could drink.
Oh, I tell you,
that was nuts. Especially when you're rained out 3 days and all you can do is drink. Oof, you're on the middle of nowhere. You're on the middle of nowhere. And the only thing you have access to is liquor. I mean, it was dangerous.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's good. That's crazy. That's crazy. I was going to say, me and Greg will get in a tent for you guys. We'll easily do that.
We'll do all those stunt double scenes. I mean,
Just
bring a big tub of butter and we're ready to go.
Yeah.
That's wow. It. There's the sound.
It's in the budget.
I like it.
I like it.
Bring the Oculus too.
Oh yeah. Put an Oculus on
that's come in handy.
Let's zoom in on this.
Yeah. That's funny. So I just want to say thank you guys again for coming on, talking about this awesome movie, the process of making it. I know it was a long journey, but I definitely think it paid off for you guys, for fans watching it like us. I enjoyed the hell out of it watching. It was so fun. Do you guys want to plug anything? Do you want to talk about anything before we get off here?
Nothing specifically. We just keep pushing the podcast network. Make sure you check out our number one show, The Conjecturing. They're really killing it out there.
Yes! Did it!
all credit to the podcast network, /cast.network.
That's it. Okay, nice. Yeah, so that's it. Like I said, thank you guys for coming on. Definitely anybody listening, go watch the film. We watched it on YouTube. I know you guys are talking about a Blu-ray, so you're gonna is there a certain site or where they can go to get that, or how are you guys handling that process?
Well, unfortunately, beyond giveaways and maybe you catch that at a convention, we cannot sell anymore. They were purely for funding the film. You can't sell them for profit. What's sold is sold, and that's that. We did finally just get the VHSs out, though. Thank goodness.
Yes.
So the Blu-rays are hopefully going to be in hand in October.
I mean, come the new year, send us an email. Maybe we can hook you up.
You guys. Cool. I'll figure it out. But
God, this is my favorite night.
Yeah. we are not allowed to just, sell them. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Got it.
nice. All right. Well, thanks again, guys. Have a good night. And we're excited to see what comes next for you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome. It was a blast. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, that's it for the interview with these awesome guys here. Like I said, if you want to follow us, you could check us email, conjecturingpod@gmail.com, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok @conjecturingpod, website, theconjecturing.com. Like I said, they already shouted out the network we're on, /and cast network. Check that out, /and cast. Podcast.network has all the other horror-ish podcast shows over there, cool content. You can check that stuff out. And then our merch, if you want to check out our merch, you can, tpublic.com/user/conjecturingpod. And that's it. That's it for the episode. We hope you enjoyed the interview. Go check out the movie on YouTube. Support it. Give it likes. Whatever the fuck you do on YouTube. Do that shit. yeah, but that's it for this week. Yeah, until next time, remember, horror is subjective, so conjecture your way. See ya.